Few feminists would have quarreled with the first part of Tesla's premise. Quote, the struggle of the human female toward sex equality will end in a new sex order with the female as superior. The modern woman who anticipates in merely superficial phenomena the advancement of her sex. The modern woman who anticipates in merely superficial phenomena the advancement of her sex is but a surface symptom of something deeper and more potent fermenting in the bosom of the race. It is not, says Nikola, quoting Nikola Tesla now, it is not in the shallow physical imitation of men that women will assert first their equality and later their superiority, but in the awakening of the intellect of women. Through countless generations, from the very beginning, the social subservience of women resulted naturally in the partial atrophy, or at least the hereditary suspension. And my comment, we know this is a class-specific suspension. Continuing. The hereditary suspension of mental qualities which we now know the female sex to be endowed with no less than men. But the female mind has demonstrated a capacity for all the mental acquirements and achievements of men. And as generations ensure that capacity will be expanded, the average woman will be as well educated as the average man, and then better educated, for the dormant faculties of her brain will be stimulated to an activity that will be all the more intense and powerful because of centuries of repose. Women will ignore precedent and startle civilization with their progress, unquote, from Nikola. And Margaret says, but the ideal society that Tesla went on to describe, modeled on that of the hive, as seems to be the metaphor that the post-French Revolution subjects of class that keeps coming up over and over for the post-French Revolution subjects of class. Continuing. The ideal society that Tesla went on to describe, modeled on that of the hive, which, quote, desexualized armies of workers, with, quote, desexualized armies of workers whose sole aim and happiness in life is hard work, unquote, could not have failed to chill his fellow men and thinking women. And I comment, take a moment and consider, if this doesn't describe the working way of life we see around us today, Plato's vision, the clockwork society of the beehive, which Proudhon raised before our eyes as a teaching device, played devil's advocate to help us see that we would not be humans if we ceased to think or feel empathy. I suspect if our current crop of Plato's tribesmen are an accurate guide to the MO of those in Nikola's life, for those in Nikola's time, of those in Nikola's time, that at this point in his life, and he is 70, his particle beam weapon perfected, and let's think some more about that wording, particle beam, given what we said last week, that the sprays that folks notice, and I noticed, associated with my getting hit, and I speculated that it was in fact some sort of particulates that boosted the effect of the stream, of the weapon itself. So it's very suggestive, that term that Nikola uses for this EMF weapon, particle beam. Let's think more about that. I'm wishing I could find in the, I have this book of his essays, but I'm not finding anything that quite goes into how he came upon that word. Of course, I'm not the probably my ignorance makes me probably the worst person to be trying. And if others already know this stuff, I'm hoping you're spreading the word far and wide. But continuing now, so I suspect that at this point, his particle beam weapon perfected, though he's still writing and engaged in research, that he has enough Iagos and other types of false folk around him, flattering, winning his trust to dupe a Machiavelli. Machiavelli, how did he do? Let alone a visionary pacifist. But notice how unfortunately prescient he was in foreseeing just how thoroughly children trained by the pedagogical methods of totalitarians would forfeit their unique, authentic selves and fit into whatever roles were assigned to them. Continuing. The acquisition of new fields of endeavor by women, their gradual usurpation of leadership, he said, will dull and finally dissipate feminine sensibilities, will choke the maternal instinct, so that marriage and motherhood may become abhorrent, and human civilization draw closer and closer to the perfect civilization of the bee. And in other writings, in other places in the book, she suggests that there were a lot of fascists around him who he was very influenced by. Throw in the possibility that he was himself getting hit. And you got a hot mess problem for our Nicola. And I'm more and more feeling he was, as with all folk that the power guys want to get rid of because they want their stuff for a variety of reasons, or want to silence them. He was isolated, intentionally made isolated, intentionally surrounded only by those who were on the payroll, in whatever sense. So his turn toward coercion after a lifetime of being very clear that coercion itself is the problem. We do not need to be forced to share our gifts. This strange flip, I think, is explained by these very likely facts. So this so-called perfect communal life of the bee, says Margaret Cheney, was radical chic for the times, promising, quote, socialized cooperative life wherein all things, including the young, are the property and concern of all. And that's straight up Plato's. That's straight up Plato, and definitely their absorption of him, these Plato's tribesmen, totalitarians. Continuing, but in the same freewheeling interview, Tesla made uncannily far-sighted technological predictions. Quote, "It's more than probable," says he, that the household's daily newspaper will be printed wirelessly in the home during the night. The problem of parking automobiles and furnishing separate roads for commercial and pleasure traffic will be solved. Belted parking towers will arise in our large cities. And the roads will be multiplied through sheer necessity, or finally rendered unnecessary when civilization exchanges wheels for wings. The world's internal reservoirs of heat will be tapped for industrial purposes. Solar heat would partially supply the needs of the home. Wireless energy would supply the remainder, and small vest pocket instruments, amazingly simple compared with our present telephone, would be used. We shall be able to witness and hear events, the inauguration of a president, the playing of a World Series game, the havoc of an earthquake, or the terror of a battle, just as though we were present. And that's unquote from Nikola Tesla, Margaret Cheney quoting him. And then she points out that Francis A. Fitzgerald, who had been a personal friend of Tesla's since the development of Niagara Falls, and who was with the Niagara Power Commission at Buffalo, New York, tried to assist the inventor with one of his most cherished scientific concepts in 1927. He interceded with the Canadian Power Commission to finance a project to transmit power without wires. And can we guess what the power guys thought about that? Is it any surprise to us that it never happened? But it planted in the minds of some Canadians a seed that regenerates itself every few years down to the present writing. And she was writing in 1981. Since then, we don't hear about it no more. In efforts to transmit regenerates itself in efforts to transmit hydroelectric power wirelessly and inexpensively through the earth. For years, it had been rumored that Tesla had invented a powerful beam, a death ray, but he'd been strangely uncommunicative on the subject. In early 1924, a flurry of news reports from Europe claimed that a death ray had been invented there, first by an Englishman, then by a German, and then a Russian. And France is not mentioned, but I am certain that those countries are participants in this, the use of this secret weapon. Almost at once, an American scientist, Dr. T.F. Wall, applied for a patent on a death ray, which he claimed would stop airplanes and cars. Then a newspaper in Colorado retorted proudly that Nikola Tesla had invented the first invisible death ray capable of stopping aircraft in flight when he had been experimenting there in 1899. The inventor was unusually noncommittal on the matter. That's a big tell with this gregarious, big-hearted man. Although Nikola's patent filings had at long last almost dwindled to a stop, one among them is believed to have particular significance. Filed March 22, 1922, it was entitled Improvements in Methods of and Apparatus for the Production of High Vacua. Years later, when both the United States and Russia entered the race to perfect modern death disintegrator ray weapons, it would be one of his ideas studied with special interest. And I've been quoting from Margaret Cheney's Man Out of Time, by her biography of Nikola Tesla.